You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to Rain Stop Play. This week we are looking at what's going on in the world of cricket. Lots of things, no series to review or preview, just lots of stuff to kind of keep on top of. We've got England cancelling the tour of Pakistan, England women against New Zealand, the IPL's back, we've got finals there to talk about, and the county championship is about to finish. I'm joined by Zach and Glenn this week. Zach, how are you? I'll start with you. You look well.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, well as well. I think we're all doing all right, aren't we? Just sort of plodding along in the world. Glenn, over in Iowa, still getting used to that instead of Wyoming. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's been a busy week already. A lot of schoolwork, a lot of marking, boring stuff like that. And yeah, strangely, with the time difference and such, I haven't really been able to get stuck into the IPL's revival yet. But yeah, would love to say I enjoyed finals week on Saturday, but I hated it. So we'll get onto that in a few minutes.
Of course, the Somerset boys won't be too happy with this pod coming up, but you know, it's got to be done. I didn't watch any of that, and I'm equally disappointed in Sussex, so we'll come on to that in a minute. But the biggest news of the week so far has been England cancelling their tour of Pakistan. I want to know what you boys think about this. There was a Michael Atherton piece I wanted to read, but it's behind the paywall, so I'm sure that might have been interesting. But let me just read a bit of the ECB statement to start. The mental and physical well-being of our players and support staff remains our highest priority, and this is even more critical given the times we're currently living in. We know there are increasing concerns about travelling to the region and believe that going ahead will add further pressure to a playing group who have already coped with a long period of operating in restricted COVID environments. So this is in reference to both the men and the women. It's supposed to be a joint tour playing two T20 internationals that has been cancelled from the back of the New Zealand cancellation as well. And there's been a lot of uproar about this, boys, so I want to hear what you think about it. Zach, I'll start with you. It's pretty bad form from England, isn't it? Because we kind of owe them one for what they did coming over to see us. Especially when you see that the British government haven't said it's not safe to go over there, it seems like a real cop out from the ECB.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite predictable. When New Zealand pulled out, it was kind of everyone was kind of waiting for England to drop out, waiting for, you know, it seemed like it was going to happen. It's a shame. Then remember, we were really excited when this tour was first announced, you know, first properly confirmed that England were going to, you know, tour Pakistan for the first time in a lot of years now. And it was going to be a really good, opportunity for women's cricket as well with them. I think they were going to do some double headers like we'd had in the 100. So that was a big moment because, you know, I feel like Pakistan's women's cricket is not quite at the level that England women's is, but that's, you know, that's the same for most nations other than Australia, really. And it would have been good, but could they have... I don't know that there's talk of obviously the COVID thing is the issue. If that's the issue, could we have sent a team of players that weren't, you know, fatigued by bubbles? Does that diminish the kind of whole idea? Because I think originally we thought, oh, we don't want this to be kind of a third-rate team going there. And obviously, we did battle them with our third-rate ODI side earlier this year. But it's, you know, like you say, we've let them down. We haven't repaid the favour. We owe them twice because they came over here in both 2020 and 2021. They came over, they were in bubbles for ages. And, you know, they saved our summer in 2020. That series earlier this year was also really important. And, it's just a massive shame, really.
I'm just looking at Christian Turner, who's come up on Twitter. I don't follow him. I don't know who he is. Well, I do know who he is. Sorry. He is the, let me find it out, British High Commissioner to Pakistan. That's it. I want to get his phrase right. Anyway, he's just come out and said that the decision made by the ECB had no influence on the British government, saying it wasn't safe. Obviously, the decision in the situation in Afghanistan at the minute was a reason why New Zealand pulled out, and there was a credible threat to the touring party. But with that coming out, you know, this afternoon, and Will McPherson's just tweeted saying, this decision is getting worse and worse as time passes. Is it too late to reverse the ferret? Probably yes. But to his point, Glenn, and to what the High Commissioner said there, this is getting worse and worse, and this really isn't a good look for the ECB. I want to hear your thoughts on the situation.
Yeah, thanks for that summary, Dan. And yeah, I completely agree with Zach. I think he made some really eloquent points there. It's really disappointing. I think it's hypocritical. I think it's the ECB trying to have their cake and eat it. It's interesting that this comes, you know, directly off the back, to contextualize it, of obviously India deciding not to play the fifth test under, you know, some contentious circumstances. I think if you were to compare the two, they're not even, but if you were to, I think India were definitely more justified with the COVID in the camp. And I personally don't feel too hard done by as an England fan about that. I think that probably for health reasons was on balance the right decision. Whereas, yeah, this feels a little cynical and a little arrogant, I think it's fair to say. I mean, I know that the English players are really struggling with bubble fatigue. That's something, you know, Zach and I touched on in the last pod, you know, looking forward to the Australia, whether, you know, there's fears about the Ashes, whether they're, what kind of quality they're going to be, what kind of players we are going to be, you know, available for selection, who's going to be on record and say, actually, I want to spend this time with my young family, which I think is completely justified. You know, so I can see why, again, cynically is the word that comes to mind. The ECB doesn't want to put their players in another bubble before a T20 World Cup, which we're among the favourites. I'd say we're probably as got as good a chance of winning that as anyone. You know, if you bring in the conditions into it, it might be tough, but it still feels like it's just them, you know, putting English cricket above other cricket boards. And especially, as Zach rightly said, after Pakistan have gone above and beyond to you know, accommodate English cricket, English concerns. They spent 2 months in a bubble in the, you know, in the midst of the early pandemic, when, I mean, you know, arguably it was potentially even scarier because there was no vaccines and we really weren't quite sure. We're still not to an extent, but we weren't quite sure really what COVID did. And the Pakistan players were brave enough. I think Zach said the phrase, save the cricket summer, which they did. You know, it's two T20s for the men and, you know, a series for the women. I just think it's really disrespectful and it's really disappointing. And, you know, again, I can see why, if the ECB are going to put English cricket first, that's what they're going to do. But, you know, 6, 9, 12 months down the line, when we want a favour from other nations, why on earth would they come here under, you know, difficult circumstances? Or why would they go above and beyond for us when this is how we treat other countries who are relying on this for advertising revenue, for broadcasting revenue? Hope, I don't know whether there would have been fans there, but potentially fans. Long and short, it's selfish. I spoke for a bit there, but it's disappointing.
No, you're spot on. I think when we look at how much the postponement of one test cost the ECB, that one India test in the millions of pounds, you wonder what this cost Pakistan cricket, losing two tours effectively now. So you worry for them. And what I don't get from England's point of view is what this does for the build-up to the start of the season, to the start of the World Cup, sorry. You've lost two games against Pakistan in subcontinental conditions for reasons I'm still not quite sure about. Obviously, with New Zealand, it was a security threat. For England, they're saying it's COVID issues and COVID bubbles, but it feels like they just didn't want to do it, and they had a good couple of reasons to do it from my end. That's just me speculating. They lose two international games. Yes, some of their players can go and play in the IPL for a bit longer, but Zach, what are they going to do? What's the point of this now? And how much do you think this is going to affect their build-up to the World Cup?
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's a worry because, yeah, two great opportunities to play in local conditions. Like you say, we've kind of, we touched on this last week with the, because obviously the IPL again is a fantastic opportunity for some of those players to play in those conditions. They're playing at the exact stadiums now. And, you know, I think it's one of the reasons why India, well, one of, you know, not definitely not the main reason, but one of the reasons why India are favourites for the T20 World Cups, because all of their players are, every single one of their players is playing in these conditions right now. And England's, you know, a few England players have pulled out of the IPL. Yeah, like I said, we touched on it last week saying they pulled out of the IPL and it's understandable. But also that was a fantastic opportunity. And this is another opportunity to see how we go in those conditions. And yeah, it's not the greatest prep for our team. I think there's a fair few players in our squad who won't have played in the UAE that much. I know, you know, that's not necessarily the case with a lot of them playing in the PSL when the PSL was quite often, you know, entirely in the UAE, or at least part of the tournament was. So a lot of our players have played in it then, but you know, it's different playing in Asian conditions 2 weeks before a tournament and playing in them 2 years before a tournament.
What I don't get, right, and I look at the bottom of the statement they brought out yesterday, they said, the ECB, this is, said, there is added complexity for our men's T20 squad. We believe that touring under these conditions would not be ideal preparation for the T20 World Cup, where performing remains top priority for 2021. Firstly, performing should be top priority all the time, by the way. We're just going to stop wanting that in 2022. But surely this was good preparation. And it's just another bubble they're going to go into. I know I don't want to belittle bubble fatigue, as I've never had to do it before. But I also feel like they're going to go in one anyway. A couple of games, it was part, like, the players probably had it in their head they were going, it was part of their routine, they're ready to go. And now it's all been kind of chucked up in the air, and there's controversy going after it, and this will bubble on for a few days. Do you think that's actually worse preparation?
Yeah, I certainly think so, because if you think about how much longer would it have meant in a bubble? I mean, it was going to be, the series was going to be a week, you know, a week and a, the last game, they were both Wednesday and Thursday of 13th and 14th of October, and our first game was on the 23rd. So it would have been an extra kind of, probably two weeks in the bubble, but now they're probably going to be having to meet up, because they're not going to arrive in Dubai on the 23rd. They're going to arrive in Dubai at least a week before. They're probably going to have to do some form of quarantine there. They're going to have to do, obviously they're going to train. They're not going to just turn up, quarantine, and then play on the 23rd. So I don't, like you say, I don't see how much. I can understand if they were going to have to quarantine in both, you know, then that is a big difference, having to do two loads of quarantine. But it does seem like a bit of a, you know, not the best excuse, to be honest.
Yeah, to me, it just does feel like excuses as well. Do you know what? I don't quite get it. So it's a real shame. And I think for the women, it's a huge shame, because that was a whole tour. And this would have been the first time England were touring Pakistan since 2008, 12, 13 years now. And that will again be pushed back to 2022, when this one was already pushed back to 2021. So it's pushback after pushback. And you don't like seeing cricket boards fighting over this sort of stuff. We should be trying to play each other as much as possible. So that's that. And expect to see more on that as time goes on. But speaking of the England women, they are finishing the English summer off at home against New Zealand. Let's have a look at how they're doing. So they're playing as we speak, actually. And they did really well to get to 178 in the third out of five ODIs. They've just started bowling. So we'll see how that goes throughout the pod. They're currently 2-0 up in that series. They won the T20 series 2-1. A couple of closer games than we expected. Zach can comment on this in a second. You've been watching a little bit of it, Zach, and it's been good fun. Again, New Zealand are slightly more competitive than I think we thought. And Tahuhu, with one of the best surnames in cricket at the minute, taking a 5-for earlier today with some excellent bowling.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, when they kind of came over for the first T20 game, it's three T20s and five ODIs, so England can win the ODI series today if they defend the 178 they've put on.
Do well to do that.
They'll do well
yeah,
to
178
will
be decent.
That's kind of been a... I'll come on to the ODI series in a second, but yeah, that's kind of been what's been happening so far, is England not put on that many runs. But yeah, in the first T20, England hit 184 for four, which is a pretty mammoth score in a women's T20 game. Beaumont hit 97, continuing on her, you know, form for England earlier in the summer. She was brilliant against India. She didn't fulfill her potential, as I predicted, in the 100, and she wasn't top run scorer, which, you know, I still haven't forgiven her for. But yeah, and it really, you know, New Zealand didn't look like they were ever going to get close. They ended up getting bowled up for 138, and it kind of thought you were a bit like, oh, are New Zealand going to be? Because obviously our England women had just been playing in the 100. You know, it'd been brilliant. It'd been, you know, really high quality. And it was kind of like, oh, this might be a bit of a rubbish end to a really great summer, because New Zealand might just get, you know, rolled over consistently. But actually, in the second T20, they fought back, kept England to 127 in their 20 overs and chased it down pretty, you know, pretty comfortably in the end, with Devine getting a 50. And she's, you know, brilliant, been brilliant for a while now. Then in the third T20 at the greatest cricket ground for, you know, in the world, Taunton, the women did wrap up the series winning by four wickets. And Danny Wyatt, you know, played a pretty important innings then. And Sophia Dunkley got them over the line, which was great to see, as she's kind of been one of the breakout stars of the summer. In the ODI series, yeah, like I said, the it's been a bit of a classic. And the first one, England got bowled out for 241, and it looked like a really good pitch. It looked like but they just kept losing wickets consistently, and it looked like a kind of 280 pitch at least. And, you know, Heather Knight looked really comfortable for her 89, and, you know, it was kind of would have been annoyed to get out like that. Then we had again, England got all out for 197 in the second game, but then they managed to kind of. I think DLS kind of helped them. I didn't watch that much of this, but I've heard that they...
No, it did. Yeah, It was a favourable one. You know how sometimes it can just fall slightly? That was definitely for England in that occasion.
Yeah. I think I saw that it was kind of, oh, they were reduced to 39 overs and they only reduced the score by like five or something. It seemed like one of those where it was a bit like, not so sure on that. But yeah, and then they managed to get over the line. Fantastic bowling by Charlie Dean, who made her debut earlier in the series. So great to see, you know, new young players coming in. And then today, like we've said, Tahuhu took a fifer, and England really struggled and all out for 178. She managed to get all of our top three out in her opening spell.
It was a good spell. Did you see, can I come to Catherine Brunt's four maidens in a row in the second ODI, was it? Did you see it was like a test match that?
That was, you know, the start of that made it look like it made it look like England's innings was suddenly massively over par. It was really strange, wasn't it? Like, the bowling in that was brilliant, and the batting was, yeah, properly, they didn't really have a clue what they were doing. They seemed really uncomfortable against her.
So that will finish with two more ODIs, and that'll be done on the 26th of September. So that'll be it, though, because when do we see England women again, Zach? Do you know? Because obviously Pakistan's cancelled, and then that's probably it until next year, until the spring, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there will be the women's Ashes. It will happen, I think, after the men's Ashes. So that will be big. There is also the Women's World Cup. So the 50-over stuff is kind of bigger for the women at the moment, which I kind of find hard to... Because at the moment, you know, if you think about it from the men's side of the game... Or if you think about it from the women's, it's all T20. ODIs are kind of extra. Mm. And then from the women's, it's the complete other way. So I keep watching the T20s being like, oh, this is huge. Well, but there's not. No, the 50-over stuff is the huge stuff. So it is, England have been winning these games, but New Zealand are a better 50-over side than they are a T20 side. So, but, you know, England haven't looked as convincing as they should, I don't think, in this series so far. But it'll be interesting to see how their prep develops for the 50 over World Cup next year, which is in New Zealand. So obviously New Zealand are also, you know, will be hoping to do well at home.
Yes, definitely. And we'll see if they can defend 178, that's another good job. But, you know, maybe they could do putting some runs on the board a little bit more often, perhaps. So you can catch those two ODIs later this week. Let's move on to the IPL, which has restarted. And Glenn, I don't want to rehash what you guys said last week, but I just couldn't give, one. It's so expletive here. I don't care. I don't like it. I'll probably end up watching it, but I just superbly do not care, especially with no crowds. I know they can't control that, but like, do you know what I'm getting at? I just can't really be bothered.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, to be honest, there's probably burnout for some fans as well with just these stop-start tournaments. And again, as we've mentioned on previous pods, like, it's not the organizer's fault, not the player's fault. It's a global pandemic. It's immensely difficult to organize a tournament that includes global players. And we saw that with the Hundreds preparation, even with replacements being replaced at the last minute. They really were scraping the barrel for some players, some of whom, like Marchant de Langer, actually turned out to do fantastic. So you just never know with cricket. Mm. But yeah, I mean, looking at the results, I mean, I think yesterday's game, Kolkata winning by 9 wickets, absolutely demolishing Royal Challengers. I mean, again, I'm not a huge fan of the IPL, not that I in any way dislike it. Growing up, I loved it. ITV4, afternoons, I'd sit there and park myself in the front of a sofa. I think it's a cracking tournament. I think one of just the issues for me at the minute is probably the time difference is number one. I really, really struggle. Same issue with the Caribbean Premier League. If it worked well with time difference, I would have watched pretty much every game of this tournament. Didn't even see a ball, which is really unfortunate. But generally speaking, I don't think even more hardcore fans, you know, such as you two, who do fantastic coverage, if I may say so, of the IPL on your roundup pods.
Thank you.
If the enthusiasm's not there, I can't speak for Zach. I think Zach might be slightly more interested. But Dan, obviously you've just said it. I can sense that it's just there's not the excitement, there's not the buzz, and I can see why. Just to round up for listeners, Sunday was the kind of reboot. Chennai Super Kings beat the Mumbai Indians by 20 runs. Pretty standard game. Chennai got 156. Mumbai struggled to get there with 136 in reply. As I said, Royal Challengers really struggled yesterday. Morgan doing one in over Kohli there. That was probably one of the international battles on the scene for that game. And then, as we're on air, similar with the England women's cricket, Rajasthan Royals got a very healthy total. That's Will and I's team of 185 in the game that's happening right now against Punjab Kings. Some decent scores in there. Runs pretty evenly spread out among the the opening two, then four and five. Livingstone getting, as usual, a pretty quick fire 25. Obviously, hopefully that can be a competitive game. But yeah, to speak to your point, Dan, the only reason I'm here talking about it is because we have a podcast about cricket. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't even check the scores, such is my fatigue. But Zach, if you have a different opinion, I saw your eyebrows were raised during my pretty ropey summary of the first game. Please fill in the listeners and those watching.
I mean, you've set the bar low for interest, saying, oh, you might be more interested than me, you know. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm overly interested in it at the moment. I watched yesterday's game, KKR and my team, seeing them win has now made me interested in it, obviously, because they were brilliant. I really enjoyed earlier today the stadium announcer. So there are some fans there. It's just, obviously, there aren't that many people in the UAE. I think you have to be double jabbed to go, but their vaccination rates have been very good. I heard the commentator saying, so the stadium announcer earlier was calling out for, he's been great, by the way, been really keen, like it's a full stadium, and was saying, all the Rajasthan fans in the house, and no one, there was absolute silence in the crowd. So I know
it's
Will.
Just one man clapping.
I know Will will love that. I mean, I think, go on, Glenn.
It just reminds me of me and Will's house party we threw. It was a week or two before we left Brighton, and we had a house party. It turned out to be good, but for the first like 2 hours, you know, that really tragic start before anyone arrives, and it's just a few blokes with a few tinnies. It was that kind of atmosphere. We were like turning up the music, and there was like five blokes sat on our sofa. That's the image I have for the Rajasthan fans turning up.
yeah. Well, that makes sense. So far we've had, like you say, Chennai beat Mumbai. I think Chennai was something really low for six, and they kind of came back and managed to get a really good score out of nowhere. I didn't watch much of that game. And then KKR were really good yesterday. Chakravarti looks like he might be kind of one of the frontline spinners for India in the World Cup, and so that's really good for them that he was good. Shami took some wickets in the end today, but really didn't look good at the start. So that's not so good for India, because he's one of their kind of few, one of their few pace bowling options in their squad. I think the funny thing for me, and I absolutely love it when a team like Rajasthan today got 185, but they got all out. That's just great
fun. I was just going to come on to that, yeah. Because Arshdeep Singh took a fifer. Could he squeeze in, do you reckon? I love it when people get bowled out on the nose. What was the game where... Was it in the IPL? Someone got bowled out for 150 off 20.
On Saturday, Hampshire did against Somerset. What we're going to come on
that
to.
That was it. Yeah. And that was we're going to come on to that. That's why I knew it. It was just clean. That is so pure and clean.
Big fan.
Anyway, Arshdeep Singh, I digress.
Yeah, big fan of him. Big fan of him. He really liked his change. He's been really good so far before the break, and now he's continuing that, which is nice to see. Not that form is going to really matter 6 months later, but it's still good to see. Young player, hasn't had a chance with the Indian national side yet. I'd be surprised if he squeezes in for this World Cup. I think, you know, they've kind of got a bit more of a, you know, he's still only 22. I can't see him squeezing in yet, but, you know, next World Cup, he's definitely one to keep an eye on, because he's got some really nice kind of change-up deliveries. He doesn't bowl too fast, but he bowls a really nice kind of like slower ball bouncer that players
pace
seem
off
to...
guys.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah,
He's your pace off in the 12th over, man.
Absolutely,
or,
yeah.
I don't know, hit the pitch hard. I don't know, one of them.
Liam Plunkett. But
Liam Plunkett. He's the Liam Plunkett of the Indian team potentially. But this IPL is going to be that. It's going to be maybe some like a burst of really good performances from what of the teams got left. 4 games, maybe 5 games each. And maybe someone can squeeze in with a good set of performances. Looking at the table earlier, preparing for this, reminding me that CSK are good again, which is a bit of fun. So that's fine. But I think to Glenn's point about fatigue, I think I'm going to pull out of the IPL this year as England pulled out of their tour to Pakistan. I am fatigued. I've had enough of cricket. And I would really like to not watch too much of this. Maybe I'll watch the final, because it's lost all narrative. I'm looking forward to the World Cup just being the World Cup, and it all happens at once, and then I can follow what's going on. I don't need my hand held through tournaments this often, but I do with this one. And my mum's not there to hold my hand anymore.
I was going to say, Dan, if it means you'll be on top form for the T20 World Cup, then you take a break, Dan. You have a month off. That's fine.
I have to perform in 2021. That's my top goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. Goal. You have to perform in the T20 World Cup, because we know Glenn. It won't be good time difference for him. So Dan, you have to perform.
Hey, Glenn, are you taking the World Cup off as well?
Well, I'm just expecting the IPL to release a statement demanding Rain Stop Play reinstate their coverage. It's been disgraceful.
There's been no preview. There's been nothing. They're like, where are they? Where are they?
I am trying not to think about the time difference for the World Cup, because I think I'll just make sure I watch the England games, but I don't know what that's going to do to my schedule. So I'm actually just pushing that until I need to think about it, to be perfectly honest.
Good. As long as you have the England games, I think that's all we really need. So the IPL is on. The IPL is on, everybody. Go and enjoy it if you want to. You don't have to. Okay, next. What's next? Finals day. Some more T20 cricket. I unfortunately missed this. I'm just taking a sabbatical from cricket at the minute. But I know you boys watched it. Somerset were obviously involved. For listeners, we had the first semi-final, Hampshire Hawks. Everyone missed that rebranding. Lost to Somerset by 2 wickets in what looked like a close game. I'm sure you can tell me if it was or not. Sussex lost, which kind of sucked, because they're like Phil Salt's leaving, Chris Jordan's leaving the one day set up. Our county team looks terrible. Rebel team's awful. And then we lost that to Kent, which kind of sucked. But they're the eventual winners. They beat Somerset in the final by 25 runs. Zach, I'll start with you, mate. How did it all go? Somerset, Hampshire 150 all out of 20. Wasn't that supposed to be a lot worse, potentially? And then they kind of fought back.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real advert for the Blast, this game.
Was it really, genuinely?
Oh, what a game.
Actual good.
What
a
game.
Proper.
Yeah, because Hampshire really struggled. Somerset had them, you know, 26 for 3. Then they had them kind of 111 for 6. Then they kind of managed to fight back and get to 150. You know, Weatherly got 71 and then, you know, got out in the last over after hitting 2 sixes in that last over. Somerset decided to bowl Marshall Dalanga overs like 14, 16, 18, 20. So it meant by the time it got to, I mean, he was just awful throughout. Yeah, I have such a love-hate relationship with that man. Yeah, so it was a really good game, and it was kind of 150 looked like a it looked like a decent score. I'd have been happy as a Hampshire fan. I'd have been very happy from where they were. As a Somerset fan, because the commentators were talking, oh, if they can just get to 130, or if they could maybe even push up to 140, that'll be good. 150, you know, and on finals day, it's not a bad score. The pitch didn't look like an absolute road. And then Somerset started, and it started badly. 29-3 after when Smead got out, and 5.3 overs. Then at one point, Abel kind of held together the innings for a while. Then he got out, and it was 103-7. And we had, you know, we needed some. I think we needed 55 from the last 24 balls at one point, and we were just consistently losing wickets. And then Ben Green, who, at one point, I was absolutely slating him to Glenn because he was kind of just tapping it and expecting, and then he was tapping it for singles and expecting Abel to just hit the big runs, and we needed Abel to be there at the end. And then as soon as Abel gets out, Green just starts magically managing to hit massive boundaries. Then he got out, and it was like, okay, still probably not going to happen. Josh Davey came in. Josh Davey and Craig Overton came in. We needed 8 from 4, and Josh Davey hit 6, and it was like, Josh Davey, you absolute legend. He'd already taken a 4-foot in the first innings. He then whips a kind of leg glance for 4 just to win us the game. And it was like, this is, I mean, unbelievable
that
cricket.
That sounds really cool. I kind of glad, yeah, I missed this one.
Crickfizz's Winviz had us at 1% chance to win at one point.
Really? At what point when you got like,
when
to
Abel
what?
Got
what
out.
Did you say you were?
Yeah, when Abel got out and we needed 55. Yeah.
1%.
That is a true out of the game. I feel like, to your point, I feel like when a team collapses and they're, let's say, 3 down within 6 overs, commentators go to, they go to 130, 125, 130 is a safe little score. So 150 is impressive, and for both teams who have done that, is equally impressive.
Well, it's interesting because statistically, 70% of games are lost. If you lose 3 wickets in the power play, you lose 70% of games. So for both teams to do that, you know, it was kind of like, okay, levels it up, I suppose.
Who wants to lose
exactly.
this one? I guess I did level it up. So that was sounded like fun. We'll skirt over the middle game because I don't think anyone's watched it. Glenn, you watched the final ball by ball, apparently. You were really into this one. The only thing I saw from it, not watching it live and sort of picking up what happened afterward, was Jordan Cox and his fielding exploits. So chat a bit about the game and chat a bit about some of the ridiculous fielding moments in this final.
It feels like a long time ago because I had a strange morning. I woke up, so the Somerset semi-final was in on Central Time in America, started at 5:30, which, let's be honest, is just too early on a Saturday. However, Brentford versus Wolves, which I was really looking forward to, kicked off at 6:30 Central Time. So I kind of had like a negotiated wake-up time where I could basically double screen, you know, both games. However, I couldn't get a stream, would you believe it, for the semi-final. They just, our usual sources of streams, weren't available, as it were, which was pretty disappointing. But, would you believe it, the commentary, the BBC commentary, which is usually blocked, embargoed, unless it's TMS overseas, so any overseas listeners, you usually can listen to test matches using TMS overseas on YouTube, like officially, it's a really nice resource, doesn't usually work for domestic games. I just clicked play, I think because I was half asleep, and it worked. So I actually had the commentary of the semi-final. And what's even funnier is that when, as Zach nicely summarized, when we did lose Abel in that semi, I turned off the commentary, I huffed and puffed, and I turned it off, and I was like, well, at least Brentford are beating Wolves, we got one victory today. I saw the score, and I turned it on for the last 2 overs just to hear Green, as you said, Zach, and Davey just smacking the ball around. So I went into, to contextualise my experience of the final, where I was quite delighted to find a television stream, I went into it feeling reasonably good. I don't think I expected us to win, but I expected, you know, at least a relatively close game. But yeah, you're right to point out Cox, Dan. He batted beautifully. He got 58 of just 28 balls, took our bowlers to the cleaners, unfortunately. They didn't have a brilliant start either. You know, at the 15-over mark, they're 111-5. You know, not really going anywhere, neither here nor there. And very similar discourse to what we just had about the semi. If, and I said this to to Tim, our Southern correspondent during the game, who's obviously also a Somerset fan. Like, if we just kept them around that kind of 145 mark, I thought it might be chaseable. Somerset did put Kent in, which both Zach and I thought was a mistake at the time. But what happened was they pushed their way with a really big flurry in the last couple of overs to 167. And the minute they passed 160, as a slightly pessimistic Somerset fan, I think there was kind of a collective, somewhat of an agreement among fans that we probably weren't going to chase that. Like, we might, but it wasn't feeling likely. And what I found was interesting, that even about the halfway point, when we were about 89 for 5, Rob Key on the Sky commentary still backed Somerset, which I found quite surprising. He was backing us quite deep into the game when we lost Smead in the 10th over. That was, for me, when I was like, well, this is probably game over here. Just for people who didn't watch the game, Crawley batted quite nicely, got a steady start for Kent. Just to go back to their innings, 41 off 33, very solid. And then basically Cox was the story. He had that flurry of runs, as I said. Fantastic. Apart from those two, nothing much to write home about. Somerset, unfortunately, started pretty poorly. We were 3 for 2 at one point. We lost Banton, who, apart from his incredible 100 against Kent earlier in the tournament, has just looked absolutely atrocious this entire season. I felt really bad for him. He's been messed around by England. He's struggled across all formats for Somerset. He probably needs a break from cricket, to be perfectly honest. Not like obviously into the next season, but he probably needs at least a month now just to take some time, because he looked so out of whack. I mean, we all looked at it. You know, he was stumped by Billings off Denley, second ball, which sounds terrible, but may I say, for people who didn't see the game, it was a beauty of a delivery from Denley. Any leg spinner, it had turn, it had dip, pitched on middle, missed off, and Billings, we all know, is on his day a world-class keeper. Smead batted lovely. He got 43 off 32 opening up as well. Obviously, we've discussed him on the 100. He was probably the breakout star for young players. He was probably the one that most casual fans really took a liking to, as well as the established cricket fans. Yeah, and really, it was basically him, and he top scored with 43, and Abel, who only got 26 off 20. Apart from that, it is basically single figure scores across the team. By the time Overton and Davey were in, who did this, you know, incredible rescuing of the game in that semi, it was game over because time was running out. And yeah, I'm delighted you mentioned Cox's fielding. There were two moments I want to really briefly talk about just before we move on. And again, I was a little bit sleepy, so I'm trying really hard to pinpoint it. But one of the moments, I think it was Smead. Okay, so it was Smead. It's coming back to me. He smacked it. He smacked one onto the boundary. Cox ran back, took a really nice catch, but one of the Kent players, I'm pretty sure it was Bell Drummond, actually slid into Cox as he caught the ball. Yeah, it was. Right, yeah, okay, I can remember it clearly. I'm glad. He caught the ball as Bell Drummond slid into him. Bell Drummond, it was just bizarre. He wasn't even close to getting to it. It was just a really sloppy piece of fielding. He wasn't going to make the catch. He wasn't going to stop the ball. He basically just fell into Cox, and Cox took a clean catch, didn't touch the boundary. Unfortunately for him, Bell Drummond touched both the boundary and Cox at the same time. And the commentator, the team of commentators, plus, dare I say it, the umpires on the field, had never seen this before in cricket. I certainly hadn't. I've never seen, you know, there's a classic, I think, you know, ask the umpire kind of short comic books. It would be absolutely ideal for that. And amazingly, they gave it not out, and it was a 6 because Bell Drummond messed up so badly. What was unfortunate for the England fans was Cox took a great catch about 3 balls later and removed Smead. But what was really stunning, and I wish I could remember, I think this was Abel or Gregory were smashing it to the boundary about a couple of balls later. It was going to be 6, and Cox, he dives, and again, I've never seen this on a cricket field. He dives full length like a goalkeeper tipping round the post. With his palms, he pushes it in midair. He saves the 6, and he pushes it straight into the hands of a fellow Kent fielder. It was, you know, they showed about 6 replays consecutively, and it wasn't enough times. I could have watched that all day. And it was the kind of moment that really took the edge off losing, because A, we weren't the best team over the entire tournament. We probably had no right to be in the final across the entire thing. I'm glad we were there. We weren't really T20 winners this year. And B, a moment of magic like that, whoever you support, genuinely, and this is a hardcore Somerset fan, that is a match-winning, tournament-winning moment. I've never seen anything like it. And for Cox to be involved in the field with the bat, doing everything, congratulations to Kent. They were better than us, and it was extraordinary. So finals day was fantastic again. So I'm glad.
They do finals day well, don't they? It's still a good part of the summer, and I know it won't end the summer next year because they're moving it forward to July, which is a good move. But I'm sure it'll still have the same atmosphere. But your point, Glenn. The Bell Drummond thing, and then Cox doing the clawing thing over the boundary, none of us has ever seen on a cricket field before, let alone to happen within the space of a few overs on one of the biggest days in the English cricket calendar. It was so cool. And I think as well, we've not been making Somerset finished second again jokes. I think that's because you're right, Glenn. They shouldn't have been that far anyway, and then they also got done by a really good Kent side. So,
absolutely.
And it's not the county champ, so I don't think you guys actually care about the T20 that much, personally. I think your guys are purists. So it was good, wasn't it? I mean, finals day is just good. It's just fun. I just like it. I think everybody enjoys a bit of finals day. And I think in July it should have the same atmosphere, if not more. You know, top of summer should be even better. Less chance of crap weather as well. So should we stick, and I'm going to come to you on this, Zach, because you're the only one who understands what's going on, and we're going to finish the county championship, which is wrapping up. No, it is wrapping up this week, as far as I'm aware. The Bob Willis Trophy is obviously still to come in rainy October, which is exciting, so help us out. Last round of fixtures, who can win it, why, and who do you want to win it, and why, and help us.
So first of all, go back to the blast quickly. Congratulations to Kent, best team across the tournament, better than Somerset across the tournament. Somerset have got a very young side.
Well done, good for you.
Somerset got a very young side. Amazing catch. And the MCC have come out today and said that the other one should have been out. Basically,
they've
come
out today. That's really interesting.
Yeah, saying the other one should come out.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we know if that ever happens again.
I thought it was the right decision. That's interesting. Regardless of the team, I thought it was technically the correct call, so I was wrong. Very interesting.
I did as well. I thought, you know, man on boundary makes six. It's, yeah. Which has just never happened before.
The law mentions intent to field the ball, so it's you know, it's one of those laws that just doesn't make it, right? Again, it leaves it open to interpretation, doesn't it though? It's one of those laws again.
Bell Drummond wasn't running around for the sake of it.
Exactly. It hasn't cleared it up. The laws aren't clear. We know that the laws of cricket are the laws of cricket. They're weird and wacky, and you know, let's not go down this rabbit hole. We want more people to get in the game.
No, we are. Stop there. We are. Because the annoying thing is, I think they've corrected a decision that didn't need to be corrected. And that's classic cricket for me.
I agree.
Because
with
I thought
that.
They'd got it right on the night, really, by using something that looked like common sense. And now they've gone, no. Yeah, actually, he didn't intend to get the ball.
He was grabbing a cold Diet Coke from the boundary.
Back to something that is far simpler. County Championship.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, this is simple as well.
There are,
we're trying to spell this out.
Well, you're not going to like this immediately. There are 6.5 points that separate.
Can I pause you right there? I was looking at the table. Let me get it back up in front of me now. So on the BBC Sport website, by the way, which is what I use mostly for this, they haven't even split up. They haven't even defined what each table means. There's just six tables in a list.
That's
help
beautiful.
Us out.
It's how cricket
Hampshire
should be.
Hampshire have lost 0.5 games.
What?
Hampshire have lost 0.5 games, Zach. Right, I'll let you speak
right,
now.
So as you, previous, Edley explained in the podcast, the reason there are half points is because people carry over half their points from the games played against the team that's in their thing. So Hampshire lost half a game because they lost a game against Somerset earlier in the season. They drew one. Hence why they carry over half those points. So they carry over half a loss. Clear as day.
That actually makes sense.
Clear as day. So let's ignore what's gone previously, because we're going to be here for years if we go on what's... Right, so basically, going into the last round of fixtures, 6.5 points separate Hampshire in first, Nottinghamshire in fourth. Hampshire, 58.5 points, play Lancashire in third, who are on 54.5 points. At Liverpool, so at Lancashire's outground, and it is an absolute... I mean, I don't know what the pitch is like, but it looks like it's it might be doing a bit, because Hampshire were 143 all out and Lancashire are 12 for 2. So I think it might be a results wicket, because obviously neither of them want a draw. If they draw, Warwickshire are probably favourites. Warwickshire are playing at Somerset at thingy. Sibley batted well, hit 56. Warwickshire 261 for 4, so looking to pile on the runs. They want to try and get as many points as they can, because Warwickshire are currently 3.5 points below Hampshire, so it could come down to bonus points between those two, although Hampshire don't know they're going to win anyway. But there's half a point that separates Lancashire and Warwickshire, and both those sides are looking like they're in relatively good positions as things stand. Notts as well are playing Yorkshire today, and they're 272 for 7. So if they can keep piling on the runs, which includes a century for Joe Clark today, and if they can keep piling on the runs, then those bonus points could be really important for them. So yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting few days. It is a shame that they had a game on Sky last week. They had Somerset playing Lancashire last week, and it was, you know, horrible to watch.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was horrible to watch, as Somerset have been for September. And yeah, we only play well in August. Everyone knows that. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Bob Willis Trophy. I'm a bit kind of, the fact there is the county championship, are people going to care? We covered this a little bit last week, Glenn.
So is the point being for listeners to say the winner of the county championship is the person who finished top of this division, right? And then after that, they're going to play what is effectively now in my head, although I have bigged this up in the past, and now I'm seeing it in person, and I'm not in the best mood. I hate it. It's effectively an exhibition match, right? Because it's not the county championship, and the Bob Willis Trophy hasn't had its time yet to become a thing that people are, like, aware or interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as a consolation, you know, I'm kind of glad Somerset won't make it this year for the Bob Willis Trophy, because it would have been more depressing if we'd have finished second and then got into the Bob Willis Trophy final. It would have been really sad. I mean,
and then lost that as well. I think this is what we spoke about this time last year when we were saying, right, next year, will Somerset finish second again? Wouldn't it be funny if they did both?
Yes. Yeah, you got to say, like, what will it matter? It's a county game. How will it be rain affected? But, you know, it's difficult to see how it's benefit. The worst thing for the county championship is the fact there's 12 counties playing games that just don't matter for anything at the moment. There's talk of next season keeping
talk about the plates.
Let's talk about that. So
participation plates.
I think the idea is that they're going to keep a conference system for another year, because it would be unfair to say now that, oh, by the way, Div 2, the top two teams in your league are going to get into Div 1 next year. That would be unfair halfway through them doing that. They should have done that from the start if they're going to do that. So apparently, this is just very much speculation at this point. They're going to keep the kind of way it works this year, which I'm not going to explain again, ever again. I've done it far too many times. is that they're going to keep the way it works this year, but for Div 2 and Div 3, they're going to do a plate competition where they can win a trophy as well. So they'll win something.
Well, that's nice for them, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. You know,
Glenn, can help us out a little bit here. I'm not a fan. Zach's a fan. You know, 1-1, fan versus non-fandom. Where are you at with it? Because I did big this up a while ago, and I'm not liking it in practice much.
I'm not a fan, by the way.
Yeah, but for the sake of this argument, all right.
Fair enough.
You're the one backing it up a little bit. So, you know, you don't have to be. That's fine. Glenn, I know you don't watch it much because you're living a long way from home at the minute, but where's it at the minute? Could and should it return to the two division system fairly soon?
You know, there's the thing that, like, I kind of liked what they got at last season, but it's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm looking at, as you said, you beautifully put it, Dan. You said, yeah, I go to the county championship table on BBC Sport. There are six tables, just in consecutive listed order. The final three. Points range from everything from 77 to 21.5. It's like someone just dropped a calculator on a floor, and this is the kind of garbage it throws up. You know, and Zach, bless his cotton socks, Zach's doing his best to galvanise us into some love for this. But it almost feels like you need, like, maybe not degree, but at least like a rudimental course in county championship economics. It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. And this is three blokes who love their cricket. I can't make head nor tail of it. I was glazing over when Zach was talking, and this man's enthusiastic. It's ludicrous. They lost me. They lost me about six weeks ago.
Here's my issue with that is I keep having to ask you, Zach, what's going on. I should have only had to ask you once, ideally, in April. And I'm not doing it because it's hilarious to watch you try and like clamber over all the definitions of things. But they should just simplify. And again, I don't think they're helped out by the fact, and this is always the case, to be fair, that it started in April and now we're here in late September going, right, hold on, who, what? Do you know what I mean? So Zach's not the defender so much as the only one who can make heads or tails of this. Cause he's
he's an interpreter, isn't he? He's a language man. You go on, Zach.
One thing I would say about it is that I do think that it's... I understand. I don't like the format. The only thing that's exciting me is the fact that there are four teams in it come the last round, which
if we do boil it down to that, it can still be fun.
Exactly, and right. I do think that has been helped by the format because they've not all played each other twice, all these teams. So that's been helped. If they'd have all played each other twice, then they wouldn't have had, you know, it did mean that there was a lot of dead rubbers. We had dead rubbers earlier on, and we have more dead rubber, even more dead rubbers now. But it's, you know, I think the fact that there are four teams in it is exciting. We haven't had, I think it was 2016, there were three teams in it, and Yorkshire and Middlesex were playing each other, and Somerset needed them to draw to win, so obviously they were never going to draw. Let's not go down that alley again. Somerset finishing second, wow. But yeah, I think it's exciting. I'm excited for the next few days to see who wins it. You know, Lancashire have just lost another wicket. Mohammed Abbas is, you know, tearing through Lancashire's top order. That's pretty fun. In the Warwickshire game, there's a lot of international players playing. Wokes is playing, Sibley's playing, Leach, Overton, Gregory. Come on. What quality players.
Okay, fine. Glenn, you had your hand up. Come on, finish this wrap-up off, because we're going to end this, what's already been quite a damp, you know, we've been quite down on cricket this podcast. End it on a high note if you can. Oh, if you weren't going to, Karen, anyway.
God, it wasn't going to be a high note. There's two quick things. Number one is that I go to check the scores, right, and it is genuinely overwhelming. I'll keep this brief, but like, you go on a BBC Sport, that's where obviously I get with ESPN and Wisdom, where I get most of my scores. Genuinely, there is a list of two, like, you know, the best part of 10 games, just in a list. And again, this may well be BBC's fault, don't get me wrong, as opposed to the tournament itself. But there's just a list of 10 games, all the various points. I don't know where to start nor end. Obviously, I follow it from that Somerset standpoint, from a fan standpoint. The funny note I do want to potentially end on is in our heyday of cricket loving and enjoyment, Dan and I once sat down in a university cafe, and I think we spent about 10 quid on it, joined the Telegraph's County Championship Fantasy League. And I think we...
Well, I remember you tried to get me to join this.
I think we sent like a text, and we did it. And we I got a little magazine out, and I made my 11, and I thought it was a really strong quality first 11, and I didn't make a single change across the entire season. And that's where I am.
That
still
is the perfect way to end it, I think. In that chat is just exactly. And I think also this is more of an indictment on the BBC than it is on the county championship, because the people on the website need to be help us out a little bit. You know what I mean? Help us out a little bit. But yeah, you can follow that for the next few days if that does it for you. There's just a lot of cricket. I'm quite tired by the cricket, so hopefully this is all finishing soon, which is great, and there'll be one thing to focus on as opposed to eight or nine. But that will wrap it up for this week. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If this makes it to YouTube, unlike the episode that should have made it to YouTube but didn't, you don't want to be bored with that. Zach, thank you so much. You've been a solid defender of all things cricket this week. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for, you know, questioning me, Dan. It's always good to, you know, it's good to back the county scene. It gets a lot of hate, and you know, it gets a lot of hate on the podcast sometimes as well. I think we are overall advocates for it. We're advocates for the Blast. The county champ maybe needs another relook, but you know, we'll see. Hopefully, it can. If we have a good end to the season, which I think we are going to have, if we can have some close games, you know, going to, I mean, that Lancashire Hampshire game's not going to day four, but you know, going into day three, if three teams can still win the county championship, I think that's pretty exciting. So hopefully it would be better if Sky were doing a game, or they would, you know, had someone at both games, and we could, you know, we've advocated before for this idea of a kind of a wickets show, but yeah, if they could do something like that. Sorry, this is meant to be me leaving. I'm going to stop talking about county cricket now.
I want to add something, that there is literally a wicket show. I assume it's at Essex. 21 wickets have fallen at Essex, Northamptonshire today. Essex were 170 all out. Northampton were 81 all out, and they're currently 1-1, following on the first day.
That's cricket in late September, that is. That is cricket in late September. And also, criminal. I bet everyone's just really, really bored as well.
Quite cold.
They're bored of playing it, mate, let alone watching it.
What is that about? I have nothing more to say. Thank you for listening, everyone.
No.
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll leave you on that then. Perfect. Thank you for listening. You know, enjoy the cricket while it's there. Zach's shaking his head. We'll be back at some point to round something up, probably next week to do a thing. There's definitely going to be some World Cup previews coming up. We're going to try and preview every team. We'll be doing England and India, I think, in one episode. And that is not favouring anything. That's just favouring who listens to us and where. Simple as that. New Zealand fans, you know, message us if you really give a monkeys. And then we'll do another preview pod. And we'll try and stagger them when they come out in the next coming weeks. So thank you for listening to this. If you've made it this far, well done. We'll be back next week at some point, and we'll see you very soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.